Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.
Angela Cerbi, Fred Film Radio from the Berlinale Festival. We're here with Agnieszka Holland. How did you get involved and fascinated about this specific subject? Why did you want to tell us this story?
Well, you know, I received a lot of emails and they have attachments. So one attachment was Charlatan with the question if I'm willing to read the script and to talk about it. So I read the script and I found it really intriguing. And different and at the same time close to the field of my interest. And speaking in very intimate way about the Europe of 20th century. But in the same time, this epical dimension is in the background somehow. And the focus is on this particular man. He's very gifted and very conflicted, very powerful and very fragile. So I found it quite fascinating. And I met with the producer and with the writer. He's very talented, quite young, but very experienced already, Czech screenwriter. And the collaboration started, and it was very good, creative, harmonious collaboration. But I told them that they have to wait if they want to do it with me, because I had another two projects in the line. And so in the meantime, I did two feature films and some TV series, and then the time of Charlatan came. And suddenly I've been scared because, you know, I was in a very different place after those few years than I've been when I was reading the script for the first time.
So did you have different feelings about it or different approach?
I'm not sure. I was in a different place. I had to, like, re-enter the story, you know, again in my system to make it work as some original voice. But after it came, you know, it was a lot of everybody was willing to, you know, to help and to push it further and to make something more special out of that.
Mm-hmm. Is it important to you to find something personal in the story you read in order to make a film with it?
Yes, it's necessary, but personal not necessarily means that it's exactly my life experience or it speaks about my, I don't know, psychological system. If it touches something which is deeply important to me, or if it touches the questions which I have unanswered, and they are coming back, they are returning. So it start to work on me.
The story of this healer reached such proportion in those times.
Well, you know, now we are in the special time, I think, because I'm. When you have this, like, cycles, like, you know, like the Enlightenment, and then you have Romanticism. So we are certainly now in the time of the Romanticism. It means the people are losing the belief in science, losing the belief, even if the science is as powerful and has such a powerful tools. Maybe it's why. Maybe, you know, this fear of the computers and artificial intelligence and every make the people wanting to come to some womb of the mystical and mythological beliefs. But certainly they are the people, and internet is helping it, you know, spreading this kind of the feeling. The people are losing the confidence in authorities, also medical authorities. They are suffering very much. You have all this, you know, story of the vaccination that suddenly people. And vaccination is something which is so evidently proven, you know. You've seen the children dying, you know, in masses because of polio or because of some other child sicknesses. And now they are not dying. So, but it doesn't matter. The people want to believe that that the science is lying somehow or try to use them. And that is also on the level of the, not only of the science, but another authorities, like, you know, liberal democracy is one who is suffering because of this belief that we have to find different way, you know, to to communicate and to make the society, and the backlash with the women's rights and the backlash with homosexual rights, and the denial by many of the global changing, global warming and the climate changes, and so on and so on. So the people are refusing this, like, scientific evidences and the scientific authorities and the experts altogether and the meritocracy as the way to lead the society. So somehow, you know, the somebody who is alternative becomes interesting again. Even if Mikolášek wasn't this kind of the shaman who is, like, using supernatural, you know, means, he's doing something which is scientifically also proven and explicable, you know, medical plants and the urine as a mirror of the human's body is something which the regular medicine can accept.
The film has a political / historical narrative level and an intimate one. The love story between these two men. How did you approach this second level?
Well, I think that this is, you know, this hidden mystery of a hidden secret of Mikolášek, is that his identity is like that he can love men and he loves this man. And in the same time, he cannot accept, not only because of the circumstances, of course, you know, it was punishable then. And it could really compromise his status and his freedom. But in the first place, the homosexuality as some kind of weakness was incompatible with his, like, ego and with his pride of being this powerful, you know, generous and untouchable man. So it was the sufferance for him and the constant conflict, which also made his relationship with František quite abusive, very abusive, even if you consider that he is pushing him to abort his child. But in the same time, tragic and desperate. And what was interesting for me, it was this also another man and you don't know exactly what are his motivations and feelings, but you can... And I really like this, you know, the way this love story is revealing itself to us, because in the first part, which happens in the present of the film, it means in 57, 58, we see those two men, and we don't know anything about their erotical encounter, but sensitive viewer can feel that it's some closeness, which is a bit like the old marriage, right? That is a mix of the care and the tenderness and little irritation and fear about other person. So when it is revealed in the second part of the film, it's not like emotional surprise. It's just like shows what the bases are and what really holds those men together. But after, when we are coming back to the beginning of their relationship and František is presenting himself to have the job, and we feel immediately some kind of the, you know, attraction from Mikolášek, and some kind of the playing, game playing from František. And after František, when he kisses him, when he's sleeping, he's like pushing him, you know. And after we see that he has like tender marriage and like nice marriage with a pretty beautiful young woman. And still he remains with Mikolášek. And on the beginning you can think that it's a question of job, or the question of some kind of admiration for the skills of the man, and also some, you know, some ambitions, the things like that, money, some, you know, objects. But slowly we see that something, that this tide is much deeper, till the very end, when we realize that he is able to sacrifice his own life. So I think it's quite interesting. Very unusual love story.
How did you relate with censorship in your career?
Well, you have different kind of censorships, and actually, when I started to make the movies in the West, I felt the this weight of this economical censorship much stronger, much more like influencing my choice, my like artistic choices, than in communist Poland. Communist Poland, when I was working, wasn't the worst. For example, in the same period in Czechoslovakia, it was practically impossible to make the film which has some kind of the inner freedom. It was terrible. But in Poland, it was mild. It means, and you can tell, and they didn't care about who acts and how it's shot, and if it's understandable or not understandable, if the actors are known or totally unknown. They didn't care. It means I could film in the way I wanted, and no one really bothered to, you know, forbid it. But it was some particular things which was impossible to attack Communist Party or to say something bad about Soviet Union, you know, this kind of shit. To be too critical to the people who has some authority. But we learn how to go around and how to fool them, and the audience was much more intelligent than today. And they've been able to read the metaphors and symbols and, you know, pars pro toto and this kind of the stylistic figures. And today they are totally unable to read it. They are so literary that, you know, that it's like really pity. And now when they are used mostly that it has to be true story, so they are taking everything so literary that, you know, that sometimes they are mixing the reality with the fiction. So this economical censorship, when, you know, when I have to fight to have the cast I want because they wanted it like that, and, you know, and endless test screenings when the audience had to say what they like, what they dislike. It was the fight for the final version, for the final cut, was much more difficult than especially in the U.S., and in Europe also now a lot of producers want the final cut, which, you know, it's sometimes, if they are really smart people, it's okay, but very often they are not such a smart people, and suddenly you are in the hands of regular idiot, you know, who whatever. So anyway, it's not easy. It's not easy job. Fortunately, I have some status that if somebody works with me, they know that they have accept that I have some kind of final word, even, and I try not to abuse it.
How was coming up as a woman director when you started your career?
I was lucky that, you know, I was surrounded by fantastic men who've been helping me and believing in me and who've been the real friends, and I was paying them back, you know, believing in them and giving them my ideas and my collaboration. So but fighting for women's voice is important because I know plenty of good films made by women. I'm going, for example, to Venice Film Festival, to Cannes Film Festival, and I see the film in the competition and in other sections, and it's like 10% of women's film and, you know, 90% of men's film. And the directors of the festival in last years, before they didn't care even, they didn't bother to explain why, but now they say, oh, we are trying to select, but it's not enough of good women's film. And after I'm watching, you know, I'm watching a lot of European films because I was for 6 years the head of the board of European Film Academy. And I see at least 10 films which are as good, or some of them better than the films which are in the competition. So fuck it, you know, I don't believe in this. I think that they are just, their brain is working in the way that they are more receptive to the men's film than to the women's film. And also sometimes they don't understand women's film because they are a bit different. They have a bit different sensibility. They have a little different voice because the women has different life experience. And not only now, but through the centuries and thousands of years. And when I'm sitting, for example, in the body of advisors, for example, I did it 2 times in Polish Film Institute, that the advisors who are giving the grants to the projects, you know, based on the packages, the screenplays mostly. And I'm sitting in the commission with 6 men and me, 1 woman. And comes the script, which I find fascinating, young women director, And the guys are saying, well, but, you know, it's boring, or I don't know what it means. And the character of the woman is not, and they have the best will. You know, it's not that they are bad guys. They are very, you know, honest, good guys. But they just don't fucking understand it, you know. I'm reading it, and I know that for every woman, this film will be like extremely, you know, important artistic and human experience. But for them, it's not. They are interested in some, you know, they are interested in Rambo, and the woman is interested in the romantic comedy. That is a stereotype, of course, but it is a bit like that. It means we have different fields of interest, most of us, at least, and different life experience, and different problems. And I realized it when I was shooting my second feature in Poland with my friend, cinematographer was very close to me, same age, and, you know, we had, like... And I was shooting the scene when the guy, it was a historical film from beginning of the 20th century, and the guy is practically raping the woman. They are both in the underground. And I immediately put the camera like that, you know. She was lying and on him. And Jacek said, no, let's put it here. I said, no, why? And I understood that this is such a basic think of the point of view. In most regular, you know, sexual encounter, woman is lying, man is on the top. So from the women's point of view, it's like that, and from the man's point of view, it's like that. So if you never see it from the women's point of view, your knowledge of the world is extremely reduced. But now it's changing, and not only because of the, you know, talks and quotas, because of the economy. Because the women audience woke up. And when you are reading, you know, the last numbers from Hollywood distribution, you see that suddenly films which have the female lead make more money than the films which have men lead. Which for ages wasn't like that, and is why also actresses have been paid the half price than the men. Because, you know, the executive said, you know, women are not going so much by themselves. They are going with the boyfriend or the husband or something, and he decides what to see. And now, no. Mm-hmm. Finish. The woman decides what she wants to see. And like that, with the change of the economy, also the amount of the, you know, writers, directors, actresses will probably change. When the women start to have the voice, they claim for the voice.
Thank you to Agnieszka Holland. I'm Angela Cherubi for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.